All right, well, in case you've missed it, the world is getting worse. Things are happening at breakneck speed. Nobody, as individuals, nobody knows how to identify anymore, because we're told that you can't say this and you can't say that and you can't think this and you can't do that because it might offend somebody. And in the process of all of that, though the motive may be okay to not bring an offense to someone, what it's done is created absolute chaos. Because there's always going to be somebody offended. It's impossible for everybody to get along. It's simply not going to happen, because we're human beings. We have different perspectives. We have different priorities. We have different everything. And they're not going to agree with everyone else. But we see this system that just constantly, is going after things like this. And in a particular in the West, but since we're Americans, we see this, just enhanced over and over again. It's driven by the media. It's driven by celebrities. It's driven by everybody who's apparently whose opinions are more important than ours, which is quite staggering when you stop and think about it. But anyway, we keep seeing these things over and over again, there's this whole mentality, we got to tolerate everybody. We can't offend anybody. And if you really sit back, and I know we've touched on this before, but if you really sit back and listen to what's being said, you cannot say anything against anybody or any religion except Christians. I hope you're paying attention to this. You can talk about anything that you want to talk about. It doesn't matter how it may be, whatever perverted it may be, you can talk about any of that and embrace it all, and you have to embrace all religions, you have to embrace all of these other things, but when it comes to Christianity, no way. It's not going to be tolerated. And we keep saying this over and over again because I'm trying to drive that point home to you. Your kids are being taught that in school. I hope that you understand that. Long ago when we first began the church, I went to the high school and talked to them about becoming a sponsor, Calvary Chapel sponsoring, and helping with the school and, with stuff like that. And they said, look, thanks, but no thanks, because you're a Christian church. We can't have it. If there was a brothel could support the school. But Calvary Chapel, and I'm not just us, other churches, don't misunderstand, I'm not saying we're the ones, but this is the way of the world. Now, we have been looking at trying to get an understanding of why this is the case. Because what you've got when you look at it from a biblical perspective, and in my opinion, from reality, okay, hello, this isn't like made up. What you see is there's a system that has been entrenched in our world and throughout its history that is opposed to God and to his people. And we have looked at in the past that the origin of where that began, where that all started. Where did all of these warped perspectives come from? Where does this thing with worshiping false gods, with worshiping stars and the moon and the sun and rivers and the ocean and trees and rocks and birds and animals, and where does this all come from? Where does this all come from? The perversion, in immorality, all of this stuff. I mean, clearly, there has to be a point at which it sort of began. And we know, I hope you know, at least, it originated in what we now know the Bible calls Babylon. That's the point. And we've talked many times about the fact that the scripture, and there is actually a book by Alexander Hislop, which is called The Two Babylons, but there's this concept that the Bible is really a tale of two cities, and it's the city of Babylon, in other words, the city of man, and it gets you where we are today in the world and the morals and all that stuff that nobody seems to be able to figure out. But it's not just that city, it's the city of God, which of course is represented by Jerusalem. That this is where the truth is. This is where, if man wants to understand who he is, and this is the question that the other system always poses, who am I, where did I come from, where am I going, and why am I here, right? I mean, how many times have we heard this over and over and over? And I remember being in high school and hearing that and just going, I never thought about that kind of stuff, but apparently people do. But that all originates, again, in this concept of Babylon, which is completely contradictory to Jerusalem. Because one represents truth, one represents error. One represents light, one represents darkness. One represents life, one represents death. And you can track history and see this all the way through. But not only is the scripture a tale of two cities, Babylon and Jerusalem, it's also a tale of two women. And you need to, we need to be very clear on this. And when we come to a chapter like Revelation chapter 17, we're going to be introduced again to this concept of Babylon, but there's a woman involved in this. Now, don't, ladies, I'm not picking on you. Don't misunderstand. It's just the way that it's described. It's for us. It doesn't mean women are bad and blah, blah, blah. That's not it. It's just the way it's described. And so we've been introduced to a woman back in chapter 12, remember? And she was a representative of Jerusalem and therefore Israel. And she has a son, who of course is the Lord Jesus Christ, who's caught up to the heavens. But then there's a dragon that comes and is involved in this, a beast that comes in and is trying to destroy the child, at the woman. Well, when we come to chapter 17 of the book of Revelation, and we're looking at Babylon, there's another part to Babylon that oftentimes, sadly, is overlooked. And I mean by people that would teach truth. And that is this concept of a system that is opposed to all that is of God. Okay? So when we come to Revelation chapter 17, we need to sit back and understand what's being said. Now, to get this, I'm going to give you just a little bit of history. I know some of you are familiar with this. We're going to look at a few verses before we actually get into the chapter, because we need to get an understanding of what's going on. Now, what I'm going to do, I want to start, we're going to look in the book of Zechariah. Now, for those of you that don't know, Zechariah was a prophet that wrote, he sent us his, what we now call the book of Zechariah. His prophecies were written after the Jews had been taken into captivity into Babylon, yeah, and they had been allowed back to the land under the Persians. Okay, so they had been allowed back in there, and right towards the close of the 4th century, or in other words, 400 years before Jesus, is about the time that Zechariah writes. Now, it's key to remember that Zechariah is writing after the Jews have been restored back to Jerusalem. They're back in the land. And that's important because Babylon is spoken of in a future tense, but Babylon, when Zechariah wrote, from a historical perspective, had been defeated by the Persians, okay? And had been overcome. And now Persia, the Medes and the Persians, which today are the Iranians and the Kurds, okay? The Babylonians are today what we call Iraqis for the most part. There's some differences, but that's who's being described here. So the Persians had allowed the Jews back into the land to rebuild their temple. And that's where we get this Zerubbabel's temple, this one that was nothing like Solomon's temple. That's the period of time that we're talking about. Now, in the midst of this prophecy, God is showing Zechariah, much like he does John, not only things that were currently happening in Zechariah's day, but things that were going to happen in the future. And so when we come to chapter 5, and it's full of all kinds of amazing stuff, wish we had time to get into all of it, but we don't. But when you come to chapter 5, Zechariah is taken, now keep this in mind because it's going to sound really familiar when we get into the Revelation passage. Revelation is taken by a malachim, an angel, of the, not an angel, the angel of the Lord, but an angel of the Lord, and is going to take Zechariah someplace and is going to show him something that will affect the people of Zechariah, but long, long in the future. Even future for us, because what we're about to read has not happened. It's being set up, but it hasn't happened. So that's sort of the background that's going on, okay? Now in verse 5, Zechariah then records this. Then the angel who talked with me came out and said to me, "Lift your eyes now and see what it is that goes forth." So whatever the angel has done, he's taken him to the wilderness and he's showing them this vision. And he says, look, I want you to look at this and see what it is that's happening. And notice that it goes forth. It's something that's taking place, but it's moving. It's not, you know, it's not stagnant. It's on the move. And so Zechariah says, so I asked, well, what is it? And he said, it is a basket that is going forth. Now, this sounds really strange to you and I, but it wouldn't have sounded strange to Zechariah. Remember, he's a Jew. He lived 500 years before Jesus, about 400 years actually. So these things, they were clearly understood, okay, by what he's meant. We're going to explain in just a second, so don't worry about it. Well, what is it? He said it's a basket that's going forth. He also said this is their resemblance throughout the earth. Now, whatever this basket is, it's going to it's the picture and the symbolism of what's taking place is something that's going to affect the entirety of the earth. Okay, so this is a universal, maybe what we could call global perspective that's going on. And then in verse 7, it says, and here is a lead disc lifted up. So whatever this basket is and represents, it's covered with a lead lid. Now, we understand lead. In our day, it's what you put on if you go to the doctor and they're taking x-rays because they cover you up because they don't want the radiation. So we know what lead does. You also know that it's in your car battery that may be dead in the parking lot if you left your lights on, you know, that kind of thing. So we understand lead. It's used in fishing weights, lead. You know, we get lead. But for these guys, it was something different because it was used, because it is so heavy, it was used to cover things. Now, you don't picture it like a manhole cover. Obviously, it's not that. I mean, this was 2,500 years ago. But there is a covering of lead on it. Here is a lead disc lifted up. And now notice what's underneath this. And this is a woman sitting inside the basket. So whatever this basket represents, it represents containment. And it's containing a woman, which we're going to see here is quite extensive here in just a minute. And it's so bad that it's even covered with a lead lid. So whatever's inside there is not supposed to get out. Okay? That's the point. That's what's being seen. But notice again, it's moving. It's on the move. He's writing after Babylon. Keep that in mind. Then he said, this is wickedness. In other words, the representation of this person in this basket is a representation of wickedness, which if it's not controlled, if it's not contained, will permeate everything that's around it. That's why it's covered. That's why it's protected. It's wickedness. Now this means everything that is opposed to truth, because that's really how we can define all of this stuff. Everything that's opposed to God. And he thrust her down in the basket and threw the lead cover over the mouth. So she apparently pops her head up and he pushes her back down. And then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two other women coming. Notice they're not bound, with the wind in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. So this is all symbolic. John is seeing this, and Zechariah is seeing this, and he's describing it for us. And what he's seeing is there's things that are taking place, and he's doing the best he can to describe it. And it looked like a stork. Now, literally, the word here probably isn't stork. It's probably more related to like an eagle. Because I don't know about you, when I think of a stork, I think of a little skinny-legged thing, kind of like me when I wear shorts. But anyway, it's a stork. And they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. So this thing has been suspended. Now, watch what happens. So I said to the angel who talked with you, well, where are they carrying the basket? Now here's where we're headed. And he said to me, to build a house for it in the land of where? Shinar. What's the land of Shinar? Babylon. You and I call it today the Fertile Crescent. It's in the Middle East, right above the Persian Gulf, and it sets between the rivers Euphrates and the river Tigris. It sets in that area. That's where it was. That's where the original Babylon, built by Nimrod, was, and we're going to be talking more about that, so I don't want to take the time now. But notice, to build a house for it in the land of Shinar. So it's talking about Babylon. Zechariah understood that. Hopefully now we do as well. So whatever this wickedness is that's being contained, it's being lifted and it's being carried to a place to where it's set. Notice, the basket will be set there on its base. So whatever this is being taken to a place in Babylon, right, where it's going to sit, and that's where, obviously, when it sets on this base, then it's going to be opened, and bad things are going to happen, okay? So what the heck is going on? Now, because we live 2,500 years after Zechariah wrote these words, we have what he did not have. We have history. to learn from. And what we learn from history, how we could describe all of this, how this wickedness and all of this, is that which would come out of Babylon would ultimately permeate the earth. It would have an effect on all of the earth, but it would be based in Shinar, in the land of Babylon. So whatever this thing is, it's going to be there, and it's going to permeate all the land. Now, Zechariah didn't know because Babylon had been destroyed by the Persians when he was writing. But we know that the Middle East has now risen up. And we also know that in the Gulf War, when our soldiers were there, that they found that Babylon was being rebuilt. Imagine that. Now, you don't hear much about it because nobody wants to talk about it. I mean, after all, it's just the Middle East, isn't it? I mean, it's just the Iraqis doing this. I mean, Saddam Hussein, well, we know he was a whack job, so it's not that big a deal. Now, what this guy was trying to do was to reestablish the kingdom of Babylon. Make no mistake about it. And all of the records and stuff are there. Everyone knows this. This is not a secret. You can go on the web and check all this stuff out if you want to. But what has happened through all of this is that that basis that started with Babylon and is apparently going to rear its ugly head once again has created, as we've already said, all of this confusion in our world over religion. Now, this is going to sound strange to you, but understand where we're headed with this because this is all prior to Revelation chapter 17. There is a story in every ancient culture. I'm talking Akkadian, Sumerian, Hittite, Canaanite, Hebrew, Babylonian, Persian, Assyrian, it doesn't matter. They all have the same thing. Rome, Greece, later on, all of these places. And there is all of this stuff. And you say, well, that's just legend. And it is. But folks, the legend started somewhere. Hello. And the legend is this. That there was this fella, we're going to use it from a Hebraic perspective because that's the biblical perspective that we're looking at. There was this fella, we're going to be talking a little bit more about him, so we won't do a lot now, but this fella named Nimrod. And we read in the scripture that he was Giborim. He was a mighty man, but literally that word is used elsewhere to mean giant, a rebel. It means to stand opposed to God. He was mighty in sight of the Lord. And what you find when you really understand that is he was mighty. He was a giant that was opposed or standing in rebellion against God. Want proof? He built the Tower of Babel. They were supposed to spread, multiply, and fill the earth. Remember? He rebelled against God and he built this thing called the Tower of Babel. And he built that to keep all of the people together because they were going to make a great name for themselves. So this guy, Nimrod, as we have discovered earlier, is literally the first world ruler. He literally ruled the world, not an empire like Rome or the Persians or the Greeks. They ruled their area, their empire, but they did not rule the world. This guy did. He did. Well, it turns out, as we know from history and from all of these other things, that he ends up marrying a hooker. Sound familiar? He ends up marrying a hooker. Her name is Semiramis. And Semiramis ends up having a son, and his name is Tammuz. Okay? So this is all. Look, you can check this out. It's all over the web. Trust me. I'm not making this up. Okay? The reason I'm bringing this up, because it affects everything. You don't know that, but it does. It has affected, it has infiltrated everything that you and I know in the world that we live in today. So after a while, by legend, she plots, she marries him, she comes in along the thing, but her plot is to overthrow him, to Nimrod, and to take away the thing and ultimately give it to her son. But in the midst of this, he finds out about this, and ultimately in one legend, she kills him, in another legend, he kills her, but whatever the point is. And then Tammuz starts to grow up, and the kingdom is going to go to him, but lo and behold, he's killed by a wild boar. Now, I know you think this is weird. You're watching it in movies most of the time when you see movies. You just don't know it. The same story is being told over and over again. Just been told in different ways. because the deception is obvious. Okay? So, but what ends up happening, the son Tammuz is killed, who, by the way, is resurrected to life. He comes back to life. And so they have this ceremony now. Because he is resurrected, he is only partly resurrected, so 6 months of the year he can be on earth, 6 months of the year he spends in the underworld. And so they spend this time. And in the month of June, okay, which on the Hebrew calendar, by the way, is called Tammuz, he is worshipped and there's weeping for him and all of this. So this has permeated everything. Because what you end up finding out is the whole concept of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz is the root of everything that you and I understand as being occultic, being idol worship, being prostitution, fill in the blank, drugs, alcohol, it all ties back to this because it was all part of that system and this worship. And the world has embraced this. Make no mistake about it. I don't have time this morning, or it would take forever, to show you how you can see this in every aspect in the world today in all of the major religions. It's always there, okay, always. Now, it's one thing, folks, for the world to embrace this nonsense, okay? Because you can clearly see here, this is a false portrait of the true God and what God did. That's the point. There's Babylon, there's Jerusalem, remember? There's the whore on the beast, and there's the woman with the child. There's this constant contrast that's going on. So we would expect, or at least it wouldn't surprise us, for the world to embrace this stuff. The problem becomes when God's people embrace this stuff. Just before the Babylonians came in and conquered the city of Jerusalem, they did that in Jeremiah and Ezekiel's day. God said, I'm going to use Babylon to bring judgment on my people because they have turned away from me and have fallen to idol worship of all of the other gods. This is God's people, okay? And in Ezekiel chapter 8, there's this just staggering chapter where God is telling Ezekiel what they have done to bring this on themselves. And he takes Ezekiel, for lack of a better word, on a tour of the temple. And he said, look, I want you to look. Put your hand right there and move that and look inside there. And what do you see? Tell me what you see. Inside the temple of God, where the priests were, the mediators between man and God, and where the articles that were to be used in worship of the God of Israel. And God tells Ezekiel, look, and see what's in there. So Ezekiel opens the thing up and he looks inside and he sees rooms, all of the different rooms that the priests are in. And he sees all of their different idols. And how when they're hidden away from plain sight of the people and worshiping Yahweh, the God of Israel, they're actually worshiping the gods of the nations. You know, they're little plastic Jesuses. We always laugh at that, but that's what was happening. Their little statues and their little altars and their all of their, you know, all of their stuff. God says, do you see? Do you see what they're doing? Ezekiel didn't know that. God had to reveal it to him. And he does other things like this, but then it comes to this verse. Let me set this up. In this Nimrod Semiramis thing, let me explain this to you real first because this will help to understand. So Nimrod is the concept of the father. Semiramis is the mother, okay? Now notice, she's called the Queen of Heaven. Keep that in mind, okay? Tammuz is the son, okay? Father, Nimrod, you have known Nimrod, at least most of us, throughout our lives because he's known by lots of different names. It's the same guy. It just depends on if you're talking what part of the world that you're talking about. But these are some of the names that people know Nimrod by. Well, obviously Nimrod. The Egyptians knew him as Osiris. The Greeks knew him as Zeus. They called him Zeus. The Romans called him Jupiter. And we could go on and on. You get the idea, okay? So it ain't like we haven't heard these things before. If you've seen movies like Clash of the Titans and blah, 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 fill in the blank, you understand this. The gods of Egypt, you know, we could go on and on. You get the idea. Well, what about Semiramis? Well, we know that's her name from the Babylonian and certainly in Hebrew. To the Egyptians, her name was Isis. Now, that is not Isis. That's the Islamic State. This is Isis as an individual. To the Greeks, she was called Diana. To the Romans, she was called Venus. And again, it goes on and on and on. There was a whole list. I thought, you know what? I'm just going to the ones that are clear. Well, the sun Tammuz, what about him? Well, he's known in Egypt as Horus. Osiris and Isis got together and their child was Horus. Heard these names before? Watch the movie The Gods of Egypt and you'll see this. Then the Greeks was Zeus and Diana. They got together and Dionysus was their son. And we could, this goes, he's called Adonis, he's called, it goes on and on and on. And then for the Romans, it was Jupiter, Venus, and their child, of course, was Cupid. Not that cute little dude running around shooting a thing at you that makes you want a chocolate bunny. No, not a chocolate bunny. Chocolate heart, sorry. That's Easter. Makes you want a chocolate heart on a Valentine's Day. That guy. You see, do you see what's happened here? We've seen all of these things, and we've seen all of this stuff, and we're just basically, we don't pay attention to it anymore. But God's people need to pay attention. Now, back to the Ezekiel passage, because I messed up. Actually, Jeremiah first. I'll get this straight. Because I rearranged this right before I came out, and I should never do that. But anyway, in Jeremiah, now remember, Jeremiah we call the wailing prophet because he's the prophet that God said, I want you to go and tell my people Israel that they're going into captivity into Babylon because of what they've done. I'm going to use Babylon to discipline them. And of course, the people were like, oh, no, no, we don't want to hear any of that. Well, as Jeremiah, who's called the weeping prophet, they imprisoned him because he was teaching the truth and stuff. Here's what their response is to this in Jeremiah chapter 44. As the word that you have spoken to us, Jeremiah, in the name of the Lord, we will not listen to you. Did you catch that? The word that you have spoken, the word of the Lord you've spoken to us, we're not going to listen to that. That's pathetic. This is the leadership of God's people making this statement. But we will certainly do whatever has gone out of our mouth to burn incense to who? To the Queen of Heaven. We don't want to hear what the Lord has to say. We've already engaged with the Queen of Heaven, worshipped by all of the other cultures, Jeremiah. Come on, dude. It's the 5th century BC, man. Get hip. Sound familiar? Church, you got to embrace. We live in 2018. Bunky, stinking, hunky. Do not buy into that. Well, you got to change with the times. No, you don't. And we are not. Don't care if we're popular or not. Not here for popularity contest. I'd be losing if I was. But you get the idea. No, we're not going to listen to that. We're going to do this. We're going to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven. Semiramis, Isis, Diana, Venus, Astarte. We could go on and on. We're going to do this in spite of the word of the Lord. And we're going to pour out our drink offerings to her. The incense, what does incense represent? Remember the smoke going up. What does it represent? Prayers ascending to the God, true God, or in this case, a false God. And pour out drink offerings to her, as we have done. We, notice now, and our fathers, which is why you're going into captivity in Babylon, just saying. As we have done, we and our fathers, our kings and our princes in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. For then, when we offered incense to the Queen of Heaven, when we offered drink offerings to her, notice, because then we had plenty of food. We were well off and we saw no trouble. Things were so much better for us when we just embraced her. And when we worshiped her, things were so much better off. And you come and tell us to worship the Lord and to listen to what the Lord says. Man, what a downer. Nobody's going to your church, man. You keep preaching that message. Right? Sound familiar? Why would we do that? No, we like the stuff. We like all of the stuff that the world has to offer. It's how we get the world on. Think seeker-friendly churches, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Embrace the system, man. Never mind the origin of the system. Just embrace it. Just be loved by all. Wow. So this origin in Babylon of this goofball statement of Nimrod, Semiramis, and Tammuz was embraced certainly by the world, but by God's people? Are you kidding me? But oh yeah. The church today wants to embrace the Queen of Heaven because she's a lot easier than God. I mean, God is such a stick in the mud, isn't he? He just doesn't want you to have any fun at all. I mean, he takes everything from you. Can't drink, can't smoke. Never said that, but that's what they say. Can't have any fun. Queen of Heaven now, that's who we want to go after. I mean, after all, to worship her, you can engage in all sorts of illicit sex, have all the drugs and alcohol that you want. And I mean, after all, if we do that and we just recognize God, surely God understands. We live in 2018. What? But that's what happens. So we can look at Israel 2,500 years ago and think, wow, what's wrong with those people? How could the people of God really spend about 5 minutes in front of a mirror? You'll see where I'm headed with this in just a second. And I'm talking to myself here, okay? If it smacks you upside the head, good! Because I can assure you it smacked me. Well, that isn't all. Now the Ezekiel passage. Look at what they've done. Look at what's happening. And I saw the priest. And he said to me, turn again, and you will see greater abominations that they are doing. So everywhere he told Ezekiel to look, in the temple, in the church, in the secret places of the temple and of the church. Take a look there. And tell me what you see. Greater abominations. So he brought me to the door of the north gate of the Lord's house, that is the temple. And to my dismay, look at what he sees. Women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. The 40 days of fasting leading up to the celebration of his death. God's people. The priests were engaged in this. They were involved in this. The worship of this goofy cultic symbolism. This all of this stuff that was opposed to God. The idol worship, the occult practices, astrology, divination, necromancy. Obviously illicit sex, what we would call today pornography, addictions of everything. You think addictions just started in the 60s? Really? You don't know world history. It's been throughout. Where does this all originate? Back here, back in this place. But this is Israel, 2,500 years ago. I wonder if the Lord said, come here and go to Rick's house. What do you see there? What do you see on the TV? Look at his phone. What do you see there? Look at his computer. What do you see there? Open the cabinet to where the DVDs are. Tell me what you see. Oh. Go to Calvary Chapel. Look in there. Look in the lives of those people that sit on a Sunday morning and say, praise the Lord and all of the good things. But look at where they're at the rest of the time. Do you see my point? What initiated back then has continued, and we're just as guilty as they are. We never can forget that. This is a scary thing because we pretend as if God, and in one place in this, in the verses prior to this, and even in that, God tells Ezekiel, They do this in secret because they think that I can't see. They think that I don't know what's going on in there. Ooh, we're going to lock the door because God can't see what I'm doing in here in the dark when no one's around. It's just me and the thing nobody knows. God says, they really think that this is what, I mean, sound familiar? Oh, God, you know. Or he'll overlook it. Or we like the Christian bar of soap, right? We'll bring out the Christian bar of soap. Well, I know it's not right, but if I do it, he's faithful, but I confess it, he's faithful and just to forgive me of my sins and to cleanse me from all unrighteousness. So I'm really okay. Really? You know how many times I've heard that? How many times I've used that? Sad. So with this background, and believe me, there's a ton more. Just this is really hard to do this because we're so limited on time on Sunday mornings. Now let's get into Revelation. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and talked with me. So one of the dudes that dumped the wrath of God out in the previous chapter, in chapter 16, right? The seven bowls of wrath of God on the world. And what did we say they were? They were poured out on the earth. They were poured out on man. They were poured out on the sea. They were poured out on the trees. They were poured out on all this stuff. What are all those things? What do all those things have in common? They're all worshipped. They have been throughout time. It's interesting. Sometimes there are people that have had issues because, and this has been over the life of our ministry, because we have a Christmas tree at our house. How can you have a Christmas tree? Don't you know that that was a worship and it was a pagan thing? Yeah, but that's not why we have it. We're not worshiping any pagan things. Well, but still, you shouldn't have anything to do with that. I said, well, do you have any trees in your yard? Yeah. You better get rid of them then. Because the Druids think that all trees are sacred. Why do you think they have those faces you can get at Walmart and put on your tree? What do you think that's all about? You think it's just really a cool thing to look at? There are people all over this world and have been throughout history, Druids and so on and so forth, right? That have worshipped trees of every kind. So if you want to say that about a Christmas tree, I'm fine with that. I have no problem with you saying that. But then you better get rid of every other tree. And while you're at it, you better get rid of all the rocks in your yard. And you better never look at the sun and the moon and the stars. Because if that's the criteria that you're going to use, then you're in big trouble. In fact, what you probably should do is lock yourself in your house. You see, that's the problem with sitting in judgment on other people. You don't get to pick and choose what happens. I mean, give me a break. But it's true. Did those things originate there? Yes, they did. The evergreen tree, it all ties back to all of this stuff. So all of this judgment from these bowls was on all of these things that man has worshipped. The rivers, the sea, and they're still worshipping them today. People, it doesn't, I mean, come on, this is not rocket science. It's all over the webs, the internet. You can go on there, and these people, I mean, we could go on and on. It just drives me crazy, and I don't want to get going because I'll get wound up, and we'll never get finished. But that's what's happening. So all of those judgments that were poured out on things that man worships in place of God, which had its origin back in Babel, even actually before that, but that's where it really came to fruition. So the angel came and said, he said, come. Now notice, what's being said to John here is there's going to be a change of location. Where has John been? He's been in heaven. Remember, he saw the tabernacle open. He saw the seven angels with the bowls. So he's there and he's seeing all this stuff from this perspective and he's watching them pour this stuff out on the earth. And so the angel says, come, because he's going to take him to somewhere that John is not currently at. There's a change in location coming. Where's he going? And I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters. He's taking him to the wilderness. What did we read about in Zechariah chapter 5? The woman in the basket covered up, contains, taken to the wilderness of Shinar. Oh, maybe they're kind of connected, you think? See, it just goes on and on. Now remember when we talked about began our study in Revelation, to understand Revelation, you have to think of the shifting scenes, because it's just like a movie. There are times when the camera is focused here, and then there are other times when it focuses over here, and there are times, you know, and that's what you have to pick that up in Revelation, or it gets all kinds of confused. So clearly there's a change. So come, I want you to come someplace else. Now notice what he says. I will show you the judgment of the great harlot. Her judgment has been predetermined. It's happening because throughout her history, we're going to find out who the harlot is, probably not this morning, but whoever this is, whoever this represents, has been a long time coming. Now remember back when we looked at chapter 15, and it said that, and the sin of Babylon was remembered by God. Remember we talked about that? We said it wasn't that God just went, oh, Babylon, I forgot. No. What it means is that God would now, all that stuff that they thought they were getting away with, God would bring that. That led into the judgments of chapter 16, the seven bulls, which affected Babylon, but we're going to see it as it moves on. So I will show you the judgment of the great harlot. Okay? This is who's in the basket. And I'm going to show you John. John would have been familiar with the book of Ezekiel, folks. Make no mistake about it. Most of us aren't, but he was. He knows that what it means is the basket's going to be opened at some point. I will show you the judgment of the great harlot. That word harlot, porneo. Porneo. What do you think comes from that? Maybe pornography? Could be. Of course. Immorality, porneas. This is where we get our words from. We think we're so clever and we made all this stuff up as Americans. Stuff has been around for millennia, right? So this, she's being described as that which is pornographic, that which is lustful, and all of the stuff that goes along with that. Stuff that is dangerous beyond comprehension. You think drugs and alcohol are dangerous? And they are. Pornography is worse. Trust me, in ministry, dealing with alcoholics and drug addicts, people with gambling addictions, as tough as they are, and they are tough, I'm not in any way making light of them. The ones that are the toughest is pornography. Because pornography is in here. Can't get it out. Can't get it out. That's the problem when you see these things. That thing is burned into your brain. And you can't get it out. And when you make that mistake and you pray, God, what have I done? Get this out of my mind. And I don't know, it's not that he's not listening. It's like, well, this is why I told you not to do that. And it just eats at you. You cannot escape it. You can get away from drugs and alcohol, man. We can drag you out there to the desert, tie you to that rock out there for about 2 weeks, give you bread and water, and you'll be off drugs in a couple of weeks. Can't take you out there and tie you to that rock because we can't change what's in here. Can't. This porn, this is the allure of it. This is the intoxication of it. And that's why I've said before, in particular men, anybody that says they don't have this kind of stuff for women, you need to check their pulse. Okay? Because that's just the way we're wired. So I will show you the great judgment of the great harlot. She's not just a harlot. She's a great harlot. Literally mega. Mega harlot. This is the big one. This is the cheese. This is where it all comes from there. Notice, though, the judgment on the great harlot sits on many waters. Now, we've already described this before. Don't worry about it because we're going to see it again. I'm going to show you why we interpret seas and waters as being people groups. You're going to see why. This is going to tell us. And the waters are later on in the chapter. But for now, she's sitting, whoever she is and whatever she represents, she's sitting over all of the peoples. This porno stuff has permeated, and it goes beyond just the sexual concept. It goes into all of the other stuff that's connected to it. Who sits on many waters? Notice what has happened. With whom the kings of the earth committed fornication. The rulers of the people that were supposed to take care of their people and watch for their people, they have embraced this and been intoxicated by everything that she has to offer, and hence are led around by the nose by who she is. Why do you think Proverbs talks about this woman? The woman, the prostitute woman in Proverbs 8, and we could go on and on, that she entices and says, oh, come on in, man, my husband's gone. Everybody okay? He's not going to be back. And it says there, like a blind fool, you follow. That's not just for anybody. That's even the leaders of the world have bought into this. They have committed fornication with her. And the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. It's intoxicating, man. It's intoxicating. You know that as well as I do. It's out there. Thank God this stuff wasn't available on the net when I was a kid. Holy crud. I would have been in huge amounts of trouble. When I was a kid growing up and all this stuff was starting to happen, you know what I'm talking about, right? Boy, if I'd have been able to have a phone to get onto some of that, oh man. Thank God that didn't happen until much later. Thank God, or I'd have been a goner. Because I'm a guy. Just the way it is. And the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine. It's intoxicating, man, and you just cannot get enough. Right? It's not just enough to sip it, even to take a drink of it. You got to consume it, and it just comes in. And this is what the world has done with this system, has it not? How come the world didn't embrace Judaism, true Judaism now, not what the religious of Jesus' day turned it into, but true Judaism, that there's a God and man needs redemption and he's going to send them. Why does the world not embrace that? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Why wouldn't the world embrace that? You would think that that would be intoxicating, but it's not. This is much more intoxicating. That's how we can be so easily led astray away from the path of righteousness. It takes no, anybody in here, raise your hand if you have to work at doing things bad. Yeah, I don't see anybody. Marie wanted to shoot her. No, I'm just kidding. No, it takes no effort to do wrong, does it? Come on, are you kidding me? It takes no effort at all. The effort is in not doing the wrong. That's why this idea that Christianity is a crutch is a bunch of bunky hunky. Because to be a Christian is to go against the flow. That takes courage, not a crutch. So these kings have committed fornication and the inhabitants of the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in spirit to the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Now, we're going to talk about all this. I know this sounds really weird, but John knows what he's seeing, but he's describing it in terms that he knew the people that he was writing to would be understanding. You and I, not so much. We don't talk about kings being mountain and peoples being seas. We don't, but they did. So it looks weird to us, but to them, it made all the sense in the world. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. Don't think of this creature walking around like you see on the web with these people that do, and this woman riding on the back. You know, she's like, you know, she's like at the rodeo with her hat. And come on. That's not, stop. But that's what we do. Because that's what we read. Well, that's what it says. But that's not what it meant. Okay? I'm trying to think of a word, something we could use. If we were to say, that is really cool to a third world person, what would they interpret that as? They would be going, it doesn't feel cool. See? We know what it means. You know, or that's really bad. And they're going, what's wrong with it? I thought it was good. No. Bad means good. Right? What? They don't get that. It's like the idea in Belize. Oh, Pastor Rick, you're so fat. I said, come here, I'll show you fat. Grab you by the throat, you little twig, and show you what fat can do. But you see, for you and I, that's an insult. But to the Belizean, it's like, wow, look at how prosperous you are. How blessed you are. You're fat. That's why I'm doing this. But we see a woman riding a beast and all of a sudden we want to draw pictures of it and it's heaven, heaven, dragon and all this stuff. And we see that stuff. Well, it's no different than saying, Rick, you're fat. It's no different. But we keep doing this stuff. They understood what this meant. It wasn't a literal dragon with seven heads. The people that, when John saw this and explained to him, and the people that John was writing to would have understood very clearly what he was talking about. He's talking about a beast, someone that's a devouring ruler who is a part of seven different empires. And there's a religious person that is basically taking advantage of this. That's what they would have seen. But oh, we've got no end of drawings on the web to show us what this is supposed to look like. She's writing a scarlet beet full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. So whatever these things are, and of course some of us know, the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. Did you catch that? So what John is seeing that he would have understand is there's this leader who was in cahoots with seven other leaders who was using a religious system, sound familiar, to accomplish all of these stuff and to destroy the saints of God and be intoxicated by it to where you want to take more of the saints of God. That's what he's seeing. And she's got royalty. She's wearing royal colors. She's obviously got wealth. She's got precious stones and stuff. But in her hand is a golden cup. It looks awesome. This is a golden cup, you guys. It's a golden cup. But when you take it down and you look inside, it don't smell that great. It's all of this stuff. Look at what it's full of. It's full of the filth. It's full of abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. Now think, cup, what do you do with a cup? You consume it. So she is not able to quench her thirst for these things. If that doesn't describe a religious system, I don't know what does. I mean, it totally does. But that's what's being described here. One more verse and then we'll finish this. And on her forehead, remember the forehead? We talked about this before. God said, before anything happens on that earth, before you guys do anything, remember, he's allowing the angels to do that. We're studying that on Wednesday nights. Why is God using angels to do this? I mean, he's God. Why does he need the angels? Oh, because there's a connection between heaven and earth. Hello? That's why angels are involved. That's why Lucifer's involved. That's why blah, blah, blah. All of this stuff. So there's this supernatural thing. But God said, told the angels, look, before any harm comes to the earth, I want you to go and I want you to mark my people. He already knew who they were. Okay, so this wasn't for God. But they were marked with his sign on their foreheads. Remember? The Aleph Tav. The cross. Okay? The cross was marked on their foreheads. And then we saw the beast of the sea out of the people. And then the other beast that comes up after him, this quote-unquote false prophet, and he demands the earth worship the first beast and show allegiance to him, and he demands a mark on the forehead and the right hand. Remember? So this concept of marking means to be identified with. So, and on her forehead, so she's marked, was written, mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. So she is marked on her forehead, but that mark, remember, was a point of identification. She wants this seen. She's not trying to hide this. She wants it evident. Mystery is the first word, mysterion. And it means something hidden, but now revealed. That's what the word mystery, mysterion, means. So on her head was written, that which has been concealed is now being revealed. Huh, that sounds like maybe a basket being opened. Just saying. That which is concealed is being revealed. Mystery, that's the first word on her forehead. Mystery, Babylon the Great. We already know that. We don't need to spend a lot of time on that. But notice this, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. She's the mother. All of the abominations, all of the other false religions that would entice and intoxicate away from God have their origin right here with this woman, who is the woman in the basket, who was hidden away until a time and it is opened up. That's what's being described here. The last verse. Now, I said that one was, but I kind of lied. Anyway, verse 6. I saw the woman. Remember, she was drinking the cup before of all that filth and stuff, just couldn't get enough. She was consuming it. And I saw the woman drunk. She's being intoxicated with all of this stuff. Can't get enough of it. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. All that immorality, all that stuff that comes along with it. Gotta have it. She was drunk. Also, notice this, with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Oh. So not only is it intoxicating to her with all her fornication and abomination and all that other stuff that goes on, another thing that intoxicates her is killing the people of God. Now I want you to notice something, because there's great argument over this, and to me, I really don't care, because it's pretty dang clear. I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Folks, there's two different groups here. I'm sorry, there's no other way to see it. She's drunk with the blood of the saints, but also drunk with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. There's two different groups. You're seeing Old Testament, New Testament here. That's what's being described. She wasn't fulfilled in drinking the blood of the Old Testament saints, what we now have identified as the remnant, called the elect in the New Testament. That wasn't enough to quench her thirst. Now she wants the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Those who are in the Christian world, the remnant, the true believing Jews, and then the church, the martyrs of Jesus. And throughout the history of Babylon, you can look at all of the murder, all the persecution, all the martyrdom of Christians, and it's happening again. Did you guys see it? Again, it's happening. Nobody pays attention. Nobody. The woman's getting away with it. She continues to fill her cup. And I expect the world not to care, not to do anything about it. But the church? Her cup is still being filled with our brothers and sisters as their lives are taken because of their belief in our Lord Jesus Christ. And we don't do anything about it. We do nothing. We just give it a passing glance, passing thought, I should say. We don't put it on our prayer list. We don't come to pray for them. We don't do any of those things. No. Now, it's just, how sad. Well, Lord, judge those people. And when I saw her, I marveled with great amazement. Now, he's not, wow, check that out. What he's marveling at, what he's astonished by, is that this harlot is sitting on this beast. That doesn't mean she's in control. It means she's riding. Now, if you know anything about world history and empires, they are constantly, always using the church as a battering ram. Think France, think England. We could go on and on. Human history. Whenever it's convenient for rulers, for kings, for systems to do so, they will use religion to accomplish their purposes, because they know that people are religious. That's why we get politicians saying, well, I'm a Christian and I believe in Christian values. Then why are you lying to me? That's not a Christian value. Enough of that. We'll really get wound up. So the bottom line is this. We're going to have to stop there. This system that initiated back, if we'd have got that far, we would have looked at this again, has permeated the very existence that you and I have as Americans in 2018. It is everywhere. And the bottom line, folks, is it's time for us to recognize it for what it is. And not to embrace it, but to stand against it, to teach, to proclaim the lies that have been precipitated in our society, because people are suffering for it. You're going to be less popular than you are now. Oh well, you ain't that popular to begin with. So why worry about it? Take a stand. Take a stand. If for nothing else, for these people that are being consumed by this system. And I cannot stress this enough, nor will I ever stop stressing this enough. Start looking at what's happening in the world to your brothers and sisters. Quit looking at Christianity from an American perspective. There's no persecution here, please. We haven't even broken a sweat. But it's costing your brothers and sisters all over the world. This system is alive and well. She is alive and well and is just waiting to be turned loose again, and that day is coming. That's what we're going to see in chapter 18. So we need to wake the crud up. It's no longer time to be on the couch. It's time to stand up and get into the game and to be the people that God has asked us to be. And lay aside all of that junk, as the scripture teaches us, lay aside everything that hinders us. Put it all aside. That's what we need to do. Amen? All right, let's stand and we'll close in a word of prayer. You guys are lucky. I can't see that clock now with that box there. I think Fred knew. He put that box in front of that clock, so I just keep teaching. Right, Fred? No, I can't see. That's why I keep going like this. Find out where I'm at on the clock. Actually did pretty good. And by the way, did anybody happen to notice that last week I did an entire chapter? No one said anything. I actually thought that might happen this week. It didn't happen. All right.